Our next guest is the assistant professor of economics and business analysis over at the University of New Haven. Wanted to discuss the economic impact of the coronavirus. He is Patrick Gourley. Patrick, good morning.
Hi, thanks for having me.
No, hey, thanks for being on, Patrick. Listen, there is not only confusion, but great concern about reopening Connecticut. Some people say it's a few weeks too late. Some people are saying that it's still too early. And when I say too late, I don't think their concerns were the first month or so, you know, because it was such uncharted territories. And yeah, you do want to err on the side of, you know, of caution, particularly when there's death involved. And so much unknown about it. But people have been saying for the last several weeks anyways that, okay, now that we're learning more about this coronavirus, it is time to put those who are less vulnerable back to work. Their adversaries would say, well, you can be asymptomatic and not, you know, in other words, you know, you don't even know that you even have the darn thing and you can be spread it, you know, continue to spread it. No. It's best to err on the side of caution and take a little extra time so that if and when it does come back, it doesn't come back, you know, twice as hard. Economically speaking, how much longer can our state economy go without being open for business?
Yeah, I think the biggest concern with the length of the lockdown is how long it's going to take then for the economy to recover. Currently, you have a lot of local businesses that are temporarily closed, but haven't actually, you know, filed for bankruptcy or shut their doors permanently. And so as long as we open while those businesses are just temporarily shut, then I think the economy can bounce back or will bounce back a lot faster than once these businesses actually go bankrupt. So my main concern is making sure that enough businesses can still reopen once it's allowed.
You know, just because they're technically allowed to reopen doesn't necessarily mean that they will and that they're going to be start making profits. And I'll give you an example. There are restaurateurs that are able to accept outdoor diners at their establishment beginning Wednesday of next week. That would be the 20th of May. Well, let's face it, Connecticut doesn't have a lot of outdoor dining restaurants, and those that do have it are limited with their seats. I mean, I was telling somebody else this morning, this is not Paris, where every restaurant seems to have outdoor dining. And I understand that the state is working with a lot of municipalities to kind of curb some of their ordinances with their TPZs and allow some outdoor dining. But talking to the restaurateurs, they say, yeah, that's fine and dandy, but it's not cost effective for us. Okay, so we're going to have four or five tables outside. It's still not economically viable for us. Would you agree to that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There'll be a difference in how businesses respond. I think one of the best examples might be hair salons. Mm. Might kind of jump right back into things because I currently look like I could be the front man in like a Beatles cover group.
Join the club, brother.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
I think there's might be lines out the door for hair salons, even if they are restricted to say 50% capacity and you have to wear a mask. But yeah, if I was in the restaurant industry or I mean any sort of concert venue or theater is going to really suffer from this, even if they are allowed to be open, because people are going to be wary and not want to go out, even if it was allowed.
Yeah, and I want to get to that in a minute. I want to continue, however, with retail and why, you know, some businesses like Lowe's and Home Depot are allowed to stay open, but yet some of the smaller mom-and-pop hardware stores were not allowed to be. Why were these winners and choosers chosen like this? And what are the economic implications from these mom and pop smaller retailers?
Yeah, they're the ones that are going to be hit hardest. I know one of my students actually works at Home Depot, and she was telling me it's never been this busy. It's busier than it was, you know, in May of 2019. And what concerns me with the mom and pop shops is they don't have the ability to take on debt as much as national chains. They don't have the lobbying pressure that the national chains do. And so I could see them being the ones that maybe we should start flipping things around and saying, well, these smaller stores, maybe they should be allowed to reopen before the big chains that have more resources to draw on.
Yeah, I agree. I think Connecticut really missed a boat on that. I want to go back to the salons that you mentioned a moment ago. I kind of equated it maybe a little while ago, maybe an hour or two ago, where if you remember, you saw the bottlenecking on 84 West going from Southington into like Waterbury, where it goes from four lanes down to two, where equating that to hair salons and barbers and hairstylists, where you've got 2 months off, and then once you reopen, you got all these people, you know, congested and trying to get into what few time slots that hairstylists are going to have open. Listen, I understand that, you know, maybe not having a waiting room with where the magazines are and, you know, being open, you know, that's probably pretty smart. But there was speculation that they would go every other chair. And while theoretically that sounds safe, those chairs are usually rented. I don't know if an owner can say to somebody who leases the chair and paying to lease that chair that, well, your neighbor can come in, the person who has the chair next to you, but you can't. How fair is that?
Yeah, I think everybody's just going to have to recognize that there's going to be a give and take. So if we are restricted, say, to 50%, I think one possible solution would be to extend hours. And a year ago or 6 months ago, it would sound crazy to have a 10 p.m. haircut appointment. But by starting the day at 7 or 8 a.m. and then going till 10 or 11 p.m. at night, then you could kind of facilitate that every other chair and still keep business going and be profitable.
Yeah, I guess you're right. It's going to be a lot of thinking outside the box and maybe at least temporarily make some exceptions as far as your hours. Of course, you know, that's if I don't know if I'd want my fatigued hairstylist to do my hair. I might walk out of the salon looking like Mo Howard. That said, the economic impact for the state of Connecticut, you know, you had said some encouraging words a moment ago where this doesn't necessarily have to be doom and gloom. Yeah, there might be, we might have to endure some pain, or we've already endured some pain. There's no doubt about that. And it may even get worse in the coming weeks, but there is light at the end of the tunnel, and you don't need to necessarily wait for a whole year to see the economic bounce back here in the state of Connecticut. That if we have, well, let's just say the first quarter's over. We're halfway through almost the second quarter, and I'm not anticipating miracles in the next 6 weeks or so. But if we can have a pretty good third quarter, would that necessarily lead into an outstanding fourth quarter? Let's face it, in the fourth quarter, that's when a lot of the holiday shopping is accomplished, providing that, you know, the retail is allowed to remain open.
It's always tough to make projections. You know, they say the two things you never want to see being made are sausages and economic forecasts. So it's going to be tough to say exactly what will happen. I think no matter what, we're not going to have a recovery this year. I don't think there's any way that first quarter of 2021 is as good as the first quarter of 2020, but I've been wrong before and could be wrong again. I just think, once again, the focus is going to be on, and what people and policymakers need to consider, is that the longer and longer the quarantines are, the slower and slower the bounce back will be. As I said, businesses are actually going bankrupt and permanently shutting and won't be able to reopen at all.
So therein lies the argument. Where do we err on the side of, you know, safety and health, on the concern of our most vulnerable, or the economic implications, where, and not that health of these small business owners isn't taken into consideration for that as well, but it's certainly the economy can affect a whole lot more people than the vulnerable side of things.
Yeah, there's a bunch of great economists, including Darren Acemoglu, who's one of our very best, had a working paper that just came out a few weeks ago, where they modeled a lot of different lockdowns and found that it's clearly better to have targeted lockdowns instead of just these blanket restrictions everywhere. Especially when you look at places like schools, and we need to start having a conversation about, should we start reopening them on some limited basis? Because children do not seem to be as affected. They don't get the illness as much. They certainly don't have severe cases near as often, and they're the ones that are going to suffer the most ultimately, where if schools are closed going into next year for a long period, that's going to result in a lifetime of lower wages and bad labor outcomes.
Yeah, we had the commissioner of state education, Dr. Miguel Cardona, on with us, was it Thursday or Friday of last week? And his goal, and I don't know if this was just the right thing for him to say politically, or if he, I take him at his word. I really do. I think his goal is to have the next school year, you know, in other words, the, I don't know, the 2021 school year, to actually begin on time in September or whatever it is, the late August nowadays. Is that a little overly ambitious, or do you think that's attainable?
Again, you know, it's tough to project how many cases there'll be, but I definitely think it's possible. You already have countries in Europe. Denmark, I think, has almost fully reopened their schools. So I can see the United States having a fairly normal opening. It's just going to be what restrictions are schools going to need? Are students going to be allowed to do gym? Are they going to be able to be 30 in a classroom? And how's that going to change things?
You know, it's a great point what you just brought up when you started referencing the other countries. Some of these other countries have reopened their economy only to begin once again starting to self-quarantine because they started to see the rise of their numbers regarding the coronavirus. Is that a good template? Is that a good form of reference that the United States should be looking at to make any decisions about opening up the country's commerce?
I think different parts of the United States need to look for different comparisons. You know, if you look at New Zealand, they've had a totally different outcome than the United States, but they're also a very different country. The virus started during their summer. They're sparsely populated. They're an island, which makes things really useful because you can control who's coming in and out very easily. And so if we're talking about what New York City needs to do versus, you know, Des Moines, Iowa, those are need to be different responses, and they need to look at different countries and see the experiences based on those other countries' population densities and climates and things of that like that.
Yeah, you had said a moment ago that you don't anticipate the first quarter of next year to be anywhere as good as it was, first quarter of this year wasn't exactly that great. January was good, and the first half or three quarters of February was okay. It wasn't really until late February, early March, that we started noticing, or that the economy started to shut down, particularly in New York, and then soon thereafter, was it around mid-March here in Connecticut? Do we look at comparing apples to apples, where how does January of 21 compare to January of 2020, or do we look at it in the quarterly aspect, or how far back do we make those comparisons? Like, would we look at 2021 not only January of 2021 not only in comparison to January of 2020, but do we also look at it compared to January of 2019 or 2018, or how far back do we go?
Yeah, we're going to need hindsight, but I think that the quarterly approach is best, so we can start comparing Q1 of 2021 to Q1 of 2019 and kind of look 2 years back. Granted, at the same time, 2019 was an excellent year, so even if our growth rates aren't quite as high, 2019 was a good year for the American economy, so it's not so much we have to get totally back to that, but we definitely need to do our comparisons to before the virus even started.
All right, so can we still save our economy here in the state of Connecticut?
What do you mean by save it?
it's not dead, but let's say it's sleeping, and it's sleeping pretty soundly right now. Is there any way that we can salvage some of it, at least for this year? And we'll worry about, you know, hopefully we can grow into 2021 from what we're able to accomplish in growth for 2020. But does it all look dim? Does it all look bleak going into the rest of the year of 2020?
I mean, there's always been recessions. This, you know, wasn't the first, and it certainly won't be the last. So I have a lot of faith in the American economy. We're very dynamic. Connecticut is not the strongest state in the U.S. economically, but it's also not the weakest either. So I think we'll get back there. It's just really how long it's going to take and how much damage happens along the way.
Yeah, I mean, you've been hearing that we could increase our unemployment and our numbers to, it's about 15% now, and it actually can go north of that to around 20%, which is very comparable to the Great Depression. However, I always say that the Great Depression happened on its own. It wasn't forced, where this was a forced shutdown. There is a lot to be said for that difference, isn't there?
Oh, I think a lot, just because the ultimate cause of what might be called the COVID recession eventually was not economic. It was because of the pandemic and disease. So I think the response is going to be different. And when you talk about unemployment, I'm still just blown away at the numbers. I mean, the Great Recession, unemployment peaked at 10%. The Great Depression, around 25%. Obviously, the data isn't as good from the 1930s, but the fact that we're now having the conversation, are we getting to Great Depression numbers? I never saw that coming. At the same time, governments know what to do now. One of the reasons the Great Depression was so bad was government and the U.S. government did the exact opposite of what it should do. When the Great Depression started, the state pulled back and put less money into the economy. They said, oh, since tax revenues are down, our expenses have to go down, which makes sense. But now we know, or at least Keynesian economists believe, that you need to do counter-cyclical spending, where as soon as the economy goes bad, governments spend more. And, of course, that's what the federal government has done in the last couple of months.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, listen, there was the whole collapse of the stock market back then as well in 1929. And there's many historians that would say, regardless of what Hoover did, even if Coolidge had remained in office, that still would have happened, because there was such a bull run on the stock market at that point in time. And in just the remaining minutes that I have with you, you know, people are right now, they're scared. There's a lot of uncertainty, and without a doubt, more doom and gloom every time you turn on the late or the local news, whether it's local news or the national news. It just seems like nobody's reporting any of the positives, you know. And I try to hold on to any kind of hope and any kind of good news that I hear of. And it's also difficult to discern what's fact and what's fiction. But talking with you, an assistant professor of economics and business analytics, I think what my final question to you is, give us some hope here. What is the bright side of things? I know you don't have a crystal ball, and of course nobody can hold you to anything, but it's not all doom and gloom necessarily. We can stimulate this economy and put people back to work this year, right?
Oh, yeah. Like I said, because the cause of this recession doesn't have to do with the economy ultimately, it's because of the coronavirus, I think we could see a recovery much quicker than the Great Recession, and more in line with the recessions in the 80s and 90s, where the economy bounced back pretty quickly.